This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Eric Pichet. He is professor and director of specialized master's program in wealth management and real estate management at the Kedge Business School, and he's coming to us today from Paris, France. Welcome, Eric. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And
good,
you?
Good. It's good to have you here. I love your accent. I guess I have an accent to you.
I hope that your auditors can understand my French accent.
Well, French is likely the most beautiful language on earth, so it's great to have you here. You know, let's talk a little bit about the global real estate market. It seems like things have been booming in many parts of the world for quite a while now. Where are we in the cycle, and what is your global outlook?
You know, there is no such thing as a global real estate market, in fact.
I'm glad you said that. In fact, there isn't even a national real estate market. All real estate is local. Good answer.
Not even at a national level.
Yes.
For example, in continental Europe, you have so many differences between if you take the capital of each country. For example, in Paris, we have the prime rent at about $1,000 for square meter for the office. In Vienna, it's $300 per square meter, so it's completely different. But what you say is, in fact, effectively, we can see now that the cycle is about this. We are probably at the same timing in the cycle in the different areas, in the different countries.
Right.
In America, probably you are a little ahead, and in continental Europe, we are just behind you. And that's probably the reason why there is some interesting investment still possible in continental Europe.
So let me just do a little conversion as to square meters and square footage. It's about 10 square feet to the meter, you know, very roughly. If you say that the rent in Paris, for example, that would be...
Prime rent.
I'm sorry, what?
The prime rent.
The prime rent. Okay, what do you mean by that?
The best quality for office, yes, of course, in the center, the center of Paris.
Got it. And, oh, now, you're talking about office rents, not residential
office,
rents.
Office, yes.
Okay. We need to know if that's monthly or annualized, obviously, but forget about that. Can we talk about residential on the residential side? That would be of greater interest.
It's the same, but for example, in residential, you have so many differences, for example, between Paris and the big German cities. Paris is much more expensive, you know, probably two or three times. And if you compare Paris with the provincial cities in France, it's the same situation. You have a price of 10,000 euros, so about 12,000 euros per square meter in Paris. After that, in Nice, it's probably 4,000. And in the other provincial cities, it's between 3,000 and 4,000. So you have a very important differences. You have a big difference.
I talk about this on a global level constantly, Eric, but I'd like to get your perception of it. So we help investors from all over the world invest in properties all over the U.S., and we basically divide real estate markets into three categories. And I think it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on this. We talk about linear markets, cyclical markets, and hybrid markets. And the cyclical markets are the high-flying, high-priced, high land value markets. So when you talk about prime rent, for example, in Paris or the German cities, et cetera, and I was born in Germany, by the way, when we talk about that, those would be the cyclical markets. And then the linear markets are sort of these kind of boring markets that kind of chug along. They appreciate, but it's moderate appreciation. When there's a downturn, the downturn's very moderate, versus the high-flying cyclical markets, the high-price markets, the fluctuations are much greater. They're more like a, you know, if you were looking at a chart, they'd look like a roller coaster, right? Or a graph, I should say. Can you speak to that at all, the cyclical, linear, and hybrid market? Hybrid just being in between the two, kind of a, you know, in between the two. Do you view markets that way in Europe or around the world, for that matter?
No, it's relatively stable. I think we don't have so important changes as you can see in the United States. The market for housing market, of course, I speak about housing market, it's relatively stable. But we have huge differences between cities, that's absolutely clear, from big Paris and the other cities in France. It's completely different, for example, in Germany, and the six or seven cities are about at the same price, you know?
Yeah, and I'm not really addressing the issue of price directly. I'm more addressing the issue of appreciation and depreciation during the economic cycles over the course of decades. That's how we, you know which markets are linear versus cyclical. But it's kind of interesting because in Europe, the real estate market is so different than in the U.S. I would venture to say, and just correct me if I'm wrong, that the real estate market there is a more slow-moving market. And I would say this for a couple of reasons. Number one, people, it's not as active. You know, people just don't sell their houses like they, in the U.S., it's a more sort of, to put it negatively, a disposable mentality. Like, hey, you know, we're going to move. I mean, the U.S. is a very mobile country. I mean, the brokerage industry is much smaller in Europe because there's just not as many transactions. That would be one factor. So you'd agree with that. And then the next factor would be that, you know, you have a lot more government interference in European markets. For example, you mentioned Germany. I mean, there's tons of rent control. I heard that in Germany, you can even will your rented apartment. Wow. I may be wrong, but I have heard that before. Speak to some of that stuff, if you would.
Yes, and don't forget that in Europe, in each country, you have a different language. So
right.
People will not change. It's not so easy as in the United States.
More friction, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Also, the problem of taxation, because when you buy a house in France, you pay about 8% of fees for buying the flats, you know. So it's very important.
Yeah, right. So in other words, when transaction costs are higher and languages vary, and sometimes currencies vary, but not as much as they used to with the euro, obviously, and, you know, countries and things vary and government level of government intrusion in the market varies, you have more friction. So the market is less fluid than it is in the States, right?
Absolutely. And people are happy to stay normally in their flat or in their house for 30 years. They like to keep in the same place. And another thing is, for example, if you work in Paris, you can work 40 years in Paris without any problems. With your spouse, it's very easy. You know, another important point, just to stay in the same place.
That's an interesting point, too. So I would argue, and I don't mean to speak negatively about Europe when I say this, but I would argue that the U.S. is a more upwardly mobile country, and people can change their status more easily here because there's less government intrusion, there's less interference in the labor markets, and so forth. And that makes it more fluid. And whenever there's more fluidity, there's more volatility because things can change more quickly. Whereas, like you said, in Europe, you can work for the same, or in France, you can work for the same company for 40 years. You got very strong labor unions and very strong labor laws protecting people and making it hard to fire people. And, you know, so there's a good and bad to this, obviously, right?
It is changing. It is changing. Yeah. But you can change your job and stay in the same place. Yes, that's important also.
Yeah. Interesting.
You are right. The friction is much more important in
right. So the friction slows down. It lessens the cycle, right? It smooths it.
The taxation friction also.
Mm-hmm. You know? Okay. Well, to talk about taxation. What about that?
Because when you buy a house, you pay 8% of taxes. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so that's very important.
That's taxes only. That doesn't include the
real estate broker fees.
Yeah, okay. Any other thoughts about the linear cyclical markets, the changes, the volatility, where we are in the cycle or anything like that?
The problem, the cycle in France, for example, you know, in principle, we have 7 year cycle. It's relatively easy if you see the history. For example, we had a high in 1990. After that, we had a low of the cycle in 1998. And a new high in 2006. And for France in general, in housing market, you have after that a low in 2014. You know, and now we are quite in the upside. But for Paris, it's completely different because with the crisis in 2008, you know, people were very afraid from securities, from everything, you know, securities or stock market and so on, they decided to buy exclusively real estate. And that's the reason why for 2008, Paris is a city with an important upside. You know, the trend is always up. Probably right. Because French people want to buy real estate because they are afraid from buying something else, you know.
So in other words, the money flows out of other investments because of fear.
Out of the stock market, out of the bonds, because bonds, you know, in France, the 10-year bonds, it's 0.7%.
Right, okay.
0.7%.
Yeah, so... So the money, there's definitely a high level of interest in owning real estate there, but let's maybe compare that and let's talk about the cryptocurrency mania. It reminds me of tulip mania that is going on. What is the view toward Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies there and around Europe in general?
Problem with Bitcoin, it's an asset, but it's interesting because a lot of people compare Bitcoin with real estate, but in fact, it's completely different. Real estate, it's a tangible asset, and Bitcoin, it's an intangible asset. And the problem with the Bitcoin, I think the technology is very innovative and probably useful, and I'm sure that the legacy of the Bitcoin will be the use of the blockchain, the possibility to exchange with a decentralized system. It's probably something which is very important, but as people, for example, my students, you know, what young people and educated people, not educated people, want to buy, to use these cryptocurrency as an instrument of speculation, I'm sure that we are now inside a typical bubble. You know, we are in the bubble. It was not the idea, probably not the idea of the founder, but now it is used as an instrument of speculation.
Oh, I agree. It's highly speculative, and many people are going to lose fortunes.
And the problem is the intangible asset. Yeah. You know, and when you buy, for example, collectibles, you buy stamps. Okay, mm-hmm. you can see a bubble on
collectibles
stamps.
Is what you said. Collectibles, yeah, stamps,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. You can buy stamps, for example. If you have a bubble on the stamps, when the bubble busts, will go bust, you have something material.
You still own a stamp.
But
yeah.
With the Bitcoin, you have absolutely nothing, zero. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why the intrinsic value of the Bitcoin is probably zero.
I would agree. And you know what's so interesting about this, Eric, is that the Bitcoin people and the cryptocurrency people, they're like the gold bugs in the sense that they say, well, you know, the dollar and the euro and other currencies are just fiat money, right?
Yep.
But, I mean, at least they're backed by, first of all, a military of their various countries, our respective countries. They're backed by the rule of law in those countries. In fact, they are the law in the United States. The legal tender laws requires that you accept them in commerce. It's just crazy how they talk about the fact that they can be printed forever, but you can create a new cryptocurrency and a new one tomorrow and another one the next day and another one the next day. You know, there's no limit at whatsoever. There may only be 21 million bitcoins, but there's no limit to the number of cryptocurrencies that can emerge. And you see that from all these ICOs, right?
But don't forget the bubble in 2000, the telecom and, bubble in 2000, in year 2000.
The telecom and the dot-com bubble, right?
Yes, the dot-com bubble. It was exactly the same. Every equity in this sector were booming, you know, not just one. You have, of course, a lot of initial public offer to feed the population, the people who want to buy everything, at that time. And I think it's exactly the same situation.
I would agree with you. I think it's a bubble. I think it's very dangerous. People are buying cryptocurrencies with their credit cards, with their home equity. Boy, when this goes the other direction, we're going to have a lot of very sorry people out there. But hey, like I've said, I'd love nothing more than to be wrong about it, because I'd love to see an alternative to the central banking cartel and the government's unholy alliance with them. And I'm talking about every central bank and every government. Let's talk about the regulatory side of that. How are the cryptocurrencies viewed by the governments and central banks, both in Europe and around the world? I would think unfavorably. This represents competition for the currencies like the euro and the dollar. They're not going to allow competition to just exist and crowd out their currencies.
In fact, you have two problems. The first problem is cryptocurrency. You have the word currency in it. And the problem is, of course, that cryptocurrency are absolutely no currency. It's not a store of value, not a unit of account, and not a medium of exchange, because a lot of people don't want to accept cryptocurrency. I think in Europe, central banks, at the beginning, they didn't consider that the cryptocurrencies were something serious, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now, with, of course, an amount of capitalization of about $200 billion for the Bitcoin, they are looking inside the box, and a lot of people are, we have some famous, what we can say, for famous young girl who ask followers to buy bitcoins, even if she had absolutely no idea of what bitcoins could be, you know. At that stage, I think the central banks and the authorities are thinking about how to not only to monitor, but probably also to prohibit the use of bitcoins. And I think we are now at this time in the cycle. So if the Banque de France or European Central Bank decided to prohibit the use of Bitcoin, you can imagine the situation, of course.
So they are looking for ways to monitor or prohibit.
Monitor.
That's what you said.
The first
yeah.
stage would be probably to monitor, and why not?
And monitor is really just another word for regulate. Monitor, regulate, and or prohibit the use of these cryptocurrencies. And you see that going on in South Korea. They've made a very clear statement about cryptocurrencies that people are going to lose their money. And I think that these central bankers and governments, they're going to shut this down. They're just not going to let it go. You know, why would they? They hate it. You know, like you said, at first, they probably didn't consider it to be a threat or any real competition for their fiat money. But I think that's changing.
I think we will probably see, maybe in the couple of months, a lot of big countries, the G20, for example, saying, well, the Bitcoin is a tool for money laundering. It's a tool for
terrorism
yeah. financing.
Right.
So we have to prohibit it because of this use, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an excellent argument, of course.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I'm not bullish on this. But again, I want to state that I would like to be wrong about this, but I don't think I'm going to be wrong. Give out your website, if you would, and close up with any comments you have, maybe a question I didn't ask you. This has been an interesting discussion.
EricPichet.fr.
Eric, EricPichet.fa, right?
Yes, exactly.
Fantastic. Any closing thoughts you have?
No, it's clear. Thank you. It's very interesting to talk about these important questions.
Yes.
And exactly the good timing to discuss on that.
Very good. Well, Eric Pichet, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.